This podcast is free and it's accessible to everyone thanks to support from listeners like you. If you value this show, please consider supporting its production by donating to our home, KUOW. It only takes a minute to give, and you'll be helping to support the production of this podcast. Make a donation at kuow.org or follow the link in the show notes. And thanks.
Good evening. From the KUOW newsroom, this is Seattle Now. I'm Paige Browning. Coming up, ice cold beer brewed by women. A growing number of women in Seattle are busting into this male-dominated industry. Ruby DeLuna brings us a taste, but first, here are today's top stories. It's Thursday, March 28th. It's one of the happiest days of the year for sports fans in Seattle, opening day of Mariners baseball. And not even the rain stopped fans from lining up early. Casey Martin reports from the ballpark.
The roof is closed on the ballpark, but regardless, it's a beautiful day for baseball. 7 hours before first pitch, Rob Bullwinkle stood first in line outside the gates.
Because last year I got here at noon and I was like 15th in line, so I thought for sure there was going to be people here when I got here.
After missing the playoffs last year, expectations are high this season. Bullwinkle really wants to see the return of slugger Mitch Haniger.
I mean, Mitch is back. Who's not excited about seeing Haniger again? He was, you know, team favorite before he left. No one wanted to see him go, and they righted it wrong by bringing him back. I think he hits the first home run of the season today.
The first game against the Red Sox this year starts at 7:10. At the ballpark, I'm Casey Martin, KUOW News.
Every time you flush the toilet, it starts heading to giant treatment centers throughout King County. And those centers are getting some love. The Environmental Protection Agency has announced it's going to loan nearly $500 million to King County for wastewater treatment. Most of the low-interest loan will go to the West Point Treatment Plant in Magnolia, which needs a new sewage pump and seismic upgrades. It's the largest amount ever committed to this region's wastewater system, and the county has already received the first chunk. King County could close its youth jail, but not by next year, as County Executive Dow Constantine said he wanted, not the year after that, but by 2028, a few years down the road. A final report on how to shutter the King County Youth Detention Center just came out this week.
Racial disparity in the youth legal system has persisted. Youth of color make up 81% of King County's juvenile detention population in 2022, despite making up 26% of the county's youth population.
That was council staffer Leah Krekel-Zoppe speaking to King County's Law and Justice Committee yesterday. But some council members are not convinced alternatives are better for Seattle. Councillor Claudia Balducci says the type of crimes by kids and teens have escalated.
We're not locking up kids for shoplifting anymore. We're locking them up for gun violence and very dangerous activity. And so we have to find a way to move forward.
The proposal to close the youth jail by 2028 needs approval from the King County Council. A vote is not set. At least 50 Somali students staged a walkout in protest this afternoon at the University of Washington. They're demanding the school do more to protect them because this month the Somali Student Association received an Islamophobic letter. One protester said the Somali Student Association contacted several campus organizations about the letter, but they received no response until they posted about it on social media.
It's unacceptable that genuine support and resources were not extended until public outrage was visible.
The protester declined to share their name, citing safety concerns. UW's president, Anamari Kause, commented via a statement. She said the university doesn't tolerate harassment or discrimination of any kind. The protesters say that message came too late, weeks after many felt shaken by the letter. The legal wrangling over homelessness is intensifying in Burien. The King County Sheriff's Office has refused to enforce Burien's latest restrictions on homeless encampments, and now Burien's suing. Amy Radel has more. Burien's police department is staffed through a contract with the King County Sheriff's Office. But earlier this month, Sheriff Patty Cole Tyndall said her agency will not be enforcing the city's latest camping ban against unsheltered people. She said Burien's ordinance is unique in creating 500-foot exclusion zones around daycares, parks, libraries, and schools. The Sheriff's Office has sued in federal court, saying the ban is so vague it violates the U.S. Constitution. Now the city of Burien has filed its own lawsuit in state court. It accuses the Sheriff's Office of breach of contract. These lawsuits come as the U.S. Supreme Court prepares to hear arguments in cases challenging similar laws next month. Amy Radel, KUOW News. The grocery delivery company Instacart is paying up for allegedly violating sick time laws in Washington. And it's a big payout. Instacart will reimburse more than 5,500 drivers, who will each get a chunk of a $750,000 settlement. The city's Office of Labor Standards accused Instacart of failing to give workers accurate pay for sick time they'd accrued and other sick time violations. Some good news for childhood cancer research. Seattle Children's Hospital is getting $50 million for research from the William Lawrence and Blanche Hughes Foundation. The Seattle Times says the donation is one of the largest gifts a single donor has ever given to a hospital. To some tourism news, every time a tourist visits Seattle, the city makes money. And in 2023, it made a lot. Tourism promoter Visit Seattle has announced that visitors spent a record $8.2 billion in Seattle's economy last year. That was a 9% increase over the year prior when it comes to how much was spent by visitors on hotels, dining, and entertainment. Visit Seattle says it's partly due to very popular events last year, including reopening the Seattle Convention Center, MLB All-Star Week, and, yes, Taylor Swift concerts. Our feature story today. Beer brewing has a reputation of being the domain of bros with beards. As Ruby DeLuna reports, beer making was once part of women's work. Now a growing number of Seattle area women are working to reclaim that heritage and diversify the industry.
In a male-dominated industry, there are a lot of assumptions about women and their brewing abilities. Leslie Shore experienced this when she began brewing professionally 15 years ago.
You had to be very on the ball with your knowledge, and you had to be firm about it, and you couldn't back down.
Shore is head brewer at Pike Brewing in Seattle, where she's hosting an event celebrating women in beer. Among those is Mari Kemper, co-owner of Chuckanut Brewery in Burlington, Washington. Before that, she and her husband were behind Thomas Kemper Beer in 1985.
I don't think people realize the difficulty in making beer. And that's probably a challenge for the brewers. They love the difficulty and trying to figure out how to really do a good product. Don't you agree?
She turns to her head brewer, Kathy Aldrich, who just started at Chuckanut 7 months ago, but has been making beer for nearly 10 years. She says part of what drew her was learning about the history of the craft.
And it's just this really interesting world view that brewing and beer can give you, and just the vastness of what beer really is. It's really hard to stop once you get invested in that story.
The story of beer wouldn't be complete without women. They've been integral to brewing since ancient times. Cooking, which included brewing, was part of women's work.
Women have always had to be incredibly industrious.
Tara Nurin is a beer educator and author of the book, A Woman's Place is in the Brew House, that traces the history of female brewers. She says in the early days, women were the public faces of beer.
Women would be making beer for the household. And then if they were skilled or lucky enough to brew surplus, then they might be able to sell some of it to their neighbors out of their house, or they might in later days go to the marketplace.
Nurin says religion, politics, and economic forces changed that over time. And as beer became commercialized and industrialization took hold, it displaced women and their role in brewing.
It wasn't until the advent of craft brewing in the 1960s, 1970s, that women started to re-enter the beer workforce.
Many would go on to start their own brewery and contribute to the growth of craft beers. The numbers are hard to come by, but when it comes to ownership, women have come a long way. But as Nurin notes, women represent just 2% of about 9,000 existing breweries.
Thank you, Maureen.
Which brings us back to the Pike Brewing event, where guests are enjoying a limited release that honors Roseanne Finkel, the brewery's late co-founder. Finkel and her husband helped create Seattle's vibrant beer scene. After years of importing wine and craft beer from Europe, the Finkels launched Pike Brewing in 1989. Head brewer Leslie Shore says proceeds from the event will fund a scholarship named after Roseanne, who was known to welcome new local breweries to the community. Shore says the scholarship aims to help people who are underrepresented in the industry.
Anything we can do to remove barriers for folks to get into the brewing industry, there's a lot of talent out there, and talent is not dependent on, you know, a guy with a beard.
The scholarship will help support the Brewer Certification Program at WSU, launching this spring. Ruby DeLuna, KUOW News.
You can find more of Ruby's food reporting at our website, kuow.org. Next time on Seattle Now, it's Casual Friday, where the panel weighs in on Costco making their food courts members only, which for some makes it a lot less fun.
I love eating food in places where you wouldn't think you'd get to eat it. It's fun for me. I love eating on the ferry. I love eating on the airplane. Like, what's the deal with airplane food? You're eating it in the sky. It's kind of fun.
That's Friday Morning on the Podcast with host Patricia Murphy. And that's a wrap from the KUOW Newsroom in Seattle. Our producer is Andy Hurst. Greg Kramer does our theme music. And I'm Paige Browning. Seattle Now and KUOW are members of the NPR network. See ya.
Seattle in the 90s. A tidal wave of iconic music roars out of this sleepy city and launches a pop culture revolution. Here's a story you haven't heard. Let the Kids Dance is a new podcast about the rise and fall of Seattle's teen dance ordinance, the law that made it illegal for young people to go to concerts. A story of moral panic, grassroots activism, and an unstoppable music community that fought for its freedom. Listen to Let the Kids Dance from KUOW and the NPR Network.